Okay, let's get serious. Now here comes the colonel.
Oh, yes, a dozen comedians sticking their nose in this program, trying to tell us how to make it work. Well, welcome back to the second half of The Promise of Tomorrow. I'm your host. I'm Colonel Mason. In a minute, we're going to get back to Gershon von Stomm. We caught up with him at Nelson Mandela University at Port Elizabeth in South Africa, and the transmission was a little broken up because we're using Skype, but listen carefully because I'm sure you're going to enjoy it. And, of course, at the end of the program, listener comments and the voice of reason. But right now, let's step over to our fountain of useless information we have here on the set for today's query. What do you say?
Welcome to the Fountain of Useless Information. How can I help you?
Oh, all right, I see we've aroused the spirit of the fountain with throwing in the coins. Oh, spirit of the fountain, here is today's query. What bird is sacred in Sweden because of its legendary presence at the crucifixion of Christ? What bird is sacred in Sweden because of its legendary presence at the crucifixion of Jesus, huh? Pray tell.
I have given you my answer, and now you may tell the others.
All right, old spirit of the mountain, seems you always know all, hear all, see all, and tell all for a price. The bird that's sacred in Sweden because of its legendary presence at the crucifixion of Christ is the stork. Yes, the bringer of babies, the stork. All right, back to our guest. And our guest this segment, Gershon von Stomm, who says it's going to take a whole lot more than technology to solve the world's problems in the developing countries. We caught up with him in South Africa, and we had to use Skype. And for that reason, you have to listen a little carefully because the transmission is broken occasionally. But what he has to say is very, very significant.
So, and by being together, we could enhance ability to do things. And out of that grew all kinds of interventions, of which the internet intervention is the most known. It's a huge network that is built by people. But there are many, many other things that also happen, which do not get so much of the spotlights. But still, every development happens. There's a local talent in charge. So somebody locally who dreamed it up.
Hello, are you still there?
I tried to forge that. Yes.
I lost you there for a minute, but what you're saying then is that it isn't going in and just all of a sudden telling people what to do or how to do it, but it's enlisting the buy-in from the local people and having them come up with their own solutions to their own problems locally, and that's the way it works even better. Is that what you're saying?
Exactly, that's what I'm saying. It starts local people, their own aspirations, their own hopes, their own dreams. And if we can amplify that human intent, and that is what technology does, it's basically an amplification. We can use it the right way, we can use it a not good way. It all depends on the human being that is involved with it. So, in my view, technology amplifies human intent, especially the ICT technology, but also if you want to drill a hole, it goes a bit faster if you can have a power tool, but that means you have to have electricity, etc., etc. So when there is human intent to better quality of living, their environment, to build it up, that's what we support.
I see. So that's really where you're working then, is to inspire people to have buy-in and make things better for themselves and their human intent. Well, we covered on this program before about the difficulty of when you don't have that sort of local buy-in, that you go in and put in a power unit or something else, and then bandits will come along and dig up the copper, and things can't be safe unless they're really protected by the local community. So what you're saying kind of goes hand in hand with that. But my next question is how are you funded? I mean, these local people are very poor. I mean, who pays you for going in and inspiring these people and teaching them how to operate in a more modern world?
Well, those are crucial questions. And well, first of all, the biggest resource is the ideas in people and their own energy and their willingness to work night and day against any adverse situation and to overcome, to work in the backyard, to do whatever it needs to go forward. That is the biggest resource we have. Of course, there are very much willing people in the world that understand that the environment in Africa needs support, maybe needs a subsidy to get going. And of course, there is capital injections needed if there is a building to be built and so on and so on. In a country, these kind of facilities are not available. There is no way of getting a mortgage. You cannot get a loan. And those kind of stuff. So there you discuss with possible donor organizations to see if they are willing to support the local idea and the local demand and provide for seed money to get going. Of course, the target should be that any operation should be self-sustainable, which is very well possible if it is really grown out of local demand, because then people are valuing what they have built themselves. Certain situation, which I will also go into during the conference, is just not possible. For instance, well, actually it might be possible, but it's almost unethical, because if we look at the cost of internet, for instance, a 2 megabit connection, 2 megabits, which is not much in Western settings right now, costs in a rural area, well, say about $10,000 a month.
Ooh.
Now, if we have 300 people using the internet, like what we have in Macha, then 2 megabit is still not much. But ordinarily, these 300 people are on a 256 kilobit. I mean, who is in the West still thinking about kilobits? But and 256 kilobits still cost in Africa about $1,400 per month. Well, we have been able to sustain that kind of costs. But it's, of course, through tears in your eyes, because what can you do? All that money just goes to the West to support people in the West, and the people that are have little to do, they are paying. So we have situations which are very difficult. But we just hope that those will change, and with making it, showing the world that these technologies can better the quality of life, which I also will do during the conference. I will show how the local community is using it for its own purposes and benefiting from its own. And, of course, in an environment in rural Africa where I do live, the prime target of life might not necessarily be the economical one. When you are deprived of everything, not the first thing is what you look is economics, you're looking at survival. So people are not necessarily all focused on economics or economic development. They are looking at quality of life for their family, for education for their children. So in the future, there might be betterment for the whole family. We must not forget that many areas in the world have not had the chance to access any of the technologies that people in the West are used to every day. And all these kind of things I would like upon during my presentation at the conference, and show it with cases and graphs and overviews how different it is, and how in a Western situation we have to change our mindset and start to truly understand the people in the environment are not that affluent, and be able to understand how life is. Be truly standing side by side and working as a partners towards progress.
Well, then, does the local government provide most of the funding for this, or is it the World Bank, or is it charitable organizations, or who is who's paying for this $10,000 for this internet hookup and these other things that you're talking about?
All right, for capital investments, we have to rely on donors, which we do. And there we have had donations from well-wishers individuals, but also from governments in the West. And we have also had a good contribution from the Zambian regulator in building out the internet connectivity also to other areas, because what has happened in the village where I do live has now been copied in 7 other villages also throughout the big country of Zambia.
Oh, wow.
The internet costs, once in a while, the community is able to pay for it at all. So it's not always needed that there is subsidy. It's, of course, crazy amounts of money, and even that the community is able to generate once in a while. Not all the time, but once in a while we can. And So we have. So sometimes we get subsidy. The companies do have subsidies for these kind of things. It's not readily available yet because it's all starting up. But for instance, in telecommunications, there exists universal service funds. These funds, which is money collected from, for instance, mobile operators and so on, are available in countries to build networks in rural areas and possibly to subsidize the differences in the cost. For instance, I know in Uganda that if you live in a rural area and you have more costs for your connectivity than it would be in town, the difference is going to be paid by the universal service funds. So it depends and about the status of development in the country, if these things are already flowing or not. But there is a recognition in the countries that certain things are quite there and needs a subsidy, like we do also in West, where there is subsidies for roads in rural areas, schooling, and so on and so on. So the country is looking into these kind of things.
Now, you're in Zambia, and we kind of think of Zambia and Zimbabwe and South Africa and these other places as being a little more progressive than other places in Africa, although you say you're in the rural area and that it's pretty desolate where you live. But, I mean, what you're doing is really only possible in what we might term a civilized society, because there's war in other parts of Africa. I think things are a little hot right now in the Congo and of course, in other places where there's a constant strife. Do you see what the good that you're doing is spreading to these other areas?
Could be, could not be, because Africa is hugely big. It is extremely big. There is more land on the south side of the equator than on the north side. It's the way that maps are projected. Mercator projection does not give good report of the size of these continents. For instance, Africa is the second biggest continent in the world, and when I, for instance, from Johannesburg, which is still 1,000 kilometers north of me, where I'm right now, 1,000 kilometers north, and I'm starting to fly to, say, to Washington, then I fly between 8 and 9 hours, and then the plane goes down for refueling, and I'm still in Africa. Then I'm another 8 hours, and then I'm in Washington. So Africa is just enormously big. So and because of the bad infrastructure of roads and stuff, the communication is very difficult, and also transfer of information goes much slower because of the connectivity or the lack of roads. For instance, you could almost state that, I mean, it takes to get from one side to the other side of Zambia, takes about 3 times longer than to get from one side to the other side of the United States.
Woo.
Of course, you're a bit bigger, but Zambia, it is enormous. It takes you a couple of days to travel from one side to the other side, using, you know, the means of transport that is normally available. And so it all depends. War zones and stuff, yeah. We know, of course, that countries can come out of war zones and, you know, use that opportunity to build themselves up in a new way. That is the example of Rwanda. Rwanda is having a marvelous implementation and a very successful implementation of ICTs, and also in the rural areas. It's a shining example. And of course, that's in a very tough environment, the Three Lakes region. It is not stable at all, but there is good progress there. And yes, the situation in a stable environment is very different than in a war zone and stuff. That's we have different organizations. Actually, there's a lot of organizations looking at how to intervene in situations where there is a high level of danger and a huge instability. I think somebody goes into such with a complete different attitude than if the environment is stable or relatively stable, like it is in Southern Africa overall. Some people will say that the country is not stable, but they are young. They are young democracies. And I think they're also still in this time, they are finding their way to define themselves in their own cultural ways. Of course, as Western people, there have been lots of efforts to help, and sometimes that help has been, very much focused on their own culture, the Western culture and the Western way of doing. As we have learned from Japan and its development, is that they have used Western technologies, but kept their own culture alive. So there are several ways of developing and defining what stability is.
Now, Gershon, you're a fascinating person. There's no doubt about that. And you're not necessarily a real young guy. Look, I believe you graduated from Rotterdam in 1965, which makes you a seasoned veteran. And you've chosen to live in Africa with your family. Now, do you have an African wife and African children, or did you bring a girl from the Netherlands?
I was born in 65, so that makes me 47 right now, and I graduated in 87.
Oh, okay.
I have been a strategist with the Dutch Telecom, the incumbent telecom organization, and was involved in their international business development and also in the development of the mobile networks at the time that, these things just sort of got stuck, SM and so on. And my wife is a doctor, a medical doctor, and her interest was certainly also to be a tropical doctor, to help in the tropics. And I had the privilege to have a very fortuitous life while in the operator scene, with operators and international cooperations. And in 2000, we decided as a family, because we didn't have children at the time, we decided to go abroad and to serve local communities wherever they were. And we have two children now. We have Elmo, who is 9 years old. We have Miro, who is 11 years old. And we have another girl, Beauty, who lives with us. She is 12 years old. And we live in the rural area. My wife is a specialist in HIV, pediatric HIV. And she is going into the rural areas to make sure or to help the communities develop their response to HIV, and especially with a focus on taking care of the children.
Oh, Gershon, how interesting that is. And I'm sorry, my notes here were wrong. You didn't graduate from Rotterdam in 65. You were born in Rotterdam in 65, so you're considerably younger than I had thought. And now tell me about your children. Is there's schooling for them there, or are you homeschooling them?
No, we are certainly not teachers. We are parents, but we didn't feel ourselves called to teach them. And as you can imagine, both my wife and myself, we keep a busy life also in the community. And later years now, I'm traveling around also with IEEE Humanitarian Ad Hoc Committee to see what we can learn and how we can transpose the knowledge. We did, in cooperation with other people, start a school, a primary school, many years ago. And during the first years, our daughter was among the first students. The school had to, I think, about 150 students. It's called Much Innovative Community School, and they are part of grade 7, so she's doing her grade 7 exam this year. So my son is in grade 4, and also Beauty is also in grade 7. So they will do local exams, and they live in the village with the local people, going to a local school.
Wow, and they're getting a quality education. That's very, very, very impressive. All right, at the conference, succinctly, one big overriding message that you're going to drive home with your graphs and your other graphics that you're going to bring to the conference. What is the one overriding message that you want to deliver at the conference and that you'd like our listeners to understand here?
First of all, I think I would like that we do understand that technology plays a serving role. It's not a leading. If we think technology is the solution to the social challenges, I think we're getting it wrong. We are here to serve people, and the technology must make sure that when we interact with people groups, that we understand the people first and then work technology later. So the focus will be on education and on working together, understanding each other. And then there are all kinds of processes and means how to do that. But the most important thing is that although we are technologists, and technology is very important because it improvises intent, it's first of all about the human intent. So if we are able to listen, to carefully listen to the local community, and to understand the local cultures, and to understand the local context, then the technology that we together develop will be successful. If we don't, then we are in for a disappointing performances of technologies, and it is our own fault. So first of all, we have to listen to the people in the land and work together, being partners, and collaborate, learn from each other. Because I think not only can people from the West bring technology to the South, I think, and especially in these times we learn right now, we can learn a lot from the people in the South about community, how together in very difficult circumstances and still smile and be together. So my message would be that we have, it's about people, and we have to learn how to listen to the local community. And as I see, we have the benefit that in almost all the countries of the world we have local people being IEEE members. So I really call upon us to leverage that wonderful ability of the organization of working together and being local and global at the same time, and that we amplify, listen very carefully to our local members in the countries that we think that might we want to help, and first contact our local people, and with the local people listen and carefully make the plans how are going to use technology appropriately and successfully in that way.
All right, Gershian von Sohm, very generous of you to be with us. Speaking by Skype from Nelson Mandela University in Port Elizabeth, South Africa, which has given us a kind of a broken transmission, but we did understand the things you had to say, and you're appreciated very much. And we will see you in Seattle, Washington, at the Global Humanitarian Conference put on by IEEE on the 21st through the 24th of October. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you very much. I understand you do this as a volunteer, so that is marvelous, and God bless you.
And at this time, I want to thank you very much for those of you who have contributed to this program. We depend on contributions from listeners like you for the existence of this show. We're totally science community supported. So those of you who have contributed, thank you very much. Those of you who wish to can do so at our website, promiseoftomorrow.biz. On the right-hand side of your screen, you'll see a little tab there for donations. Just click the donations, and we appreciate all your help.
And now, we make time for the voice of reason. Listener comments, ideas, and suggestions.
A really good word, and that's tolerance, and listening to other perspectives, and it's nice to be, I think it's good to be challenged on your own viewpoints and perspectives, and the data and the information that's out there, it needs to be more compelling. If there are still naysayers and folks who are wondering, is this really an issue or not, then I think that's really on the shoulders of the scientists to continue to provide compelling stories. And I'm sure we could do a lot better in that regard. So I guess the word to the wise might be tolerance and learning from other perspectives and seeing what that does for your own sort of career goalposts. My name is Tracy Farrell. I'm the Senior Director of Freshwater Conservation for Conservation International.
So you decide, has this really been the voice of reason? Listener comments are welcome at 214-329-4949. And please tell us your name and where you're from.
You've been listening to The Promise of Tomorrow with Colonel Mason, the definitive program on emerging and nanotechnologies, now archived and streamed on the web at promiseoftomorrow.biz. Join us next week at the same time as we learn more about the promise of tomorrow.
I am waiting for you.